You're editing this, so God knows what you could make me sound like at this point by taking me talking about butts and toes this much and putting it all together.
Welcome to Entertain. This is a podcast about movies, TV shows, and video games. My name's Tom. This is Mitch, and we have Nick Roth, writer and director of Hanky Panky, which is, correct me if I'm wrong, 2024 is when it was filmed, correct? Or it's going to be released in 2024.
Yes.
Gotcha. 420.
There you go.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's coming out for 420 weekend.
So I'd seen the trailer, and it was 2014 when you guys did the trailer, right? And it was a short?
We made a short film of the same name in 2014. But then there's a trailer for this feature, which is a separate, different movie.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, because we saw both when we looked it up on IMDb, and that's what Tom was asking me. I was like, I think that was the short, and then he made it a full feature, so I wasn't sure.
That's correct.
Well, thank you.
Did you guys watch the short film?
I did not watch the short film. Mitch had sent me the link, and I pulled it up, and I was like, I thought this was a movie. I'm like, this is a minute and a half, good, or however long it is. And then he's like, no, it's this. And then I got the actual movie and saw it.
Great. Okay. The minute is the trailer. There's like an 8-minute, ignore that short film. And then there is also a movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. When did the movie get filmed?
2016. It took a really long time to edit because I didn't really know what I was doing, and my wife and I were editing it in our spare time, basically. Mm-hmm. So 2016 to 2023 was the golden 7 years of post production.
The post production for the fight between two of major characters. I'm not going to divulge it now. We'll get into it as we go through the movie. But some of, like, the anime edits, I about spit my beer out when I was watching it. It just kind of caught me off guard. I was like, oh.
I'm glad you brought it up. It's a controversial sequence in terms of how long should that go on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big fan of, like, an extended fight scene in your third act. Like, I love that. I love my kung fu movies, action movies. That's my jam. I was like, we're promising this audience that a napkin's gonna fight a hat, and it's gonna have to, like, I'm not gonna chicken out, you know what I mean? So it's a 4.5-minute puppet fight scene. Yeah,
it's a great puppet fight scene. So I mean, I started watching the movie, the trailer, the beginning of the film, the guys running through a very picturesque kind of like Aspen, Colorado resort looking place. And he finally gets some phone signal, and then blood just goes everywhere. And I was like, well, who killed him? How did it all happen? And then I get
that's the question I'm hoping you'll ask at the beginning of the film.
You had me right there. I was like, all right, now I got to find out how he got it. we're going to watch this movie. I can't remember the guy's name now off the top of my head. The guy with the mustache who shows
Sam.
And the napkin.
Oh, Sam.
Like, I just see the hand, and he's talking to him, and I'm like, this movie's great. I was like, whoever thought of this, you're a genius, because that's like the funniest thing I've seen in a long time.
I don't know, man. People hadn't made enough talking napkin movies, but like, you could just put the napkin on your hand. I mean, I say that, but Toby Bryan was the lead puppeteer of this film, and he really did wonders bringing that napkin to life, I think.
He did. Was the napkin your idea?
I don't remember whose idea the napkin was. I wish I could take credit for things. At some point, everything in this movie was just somebody's idea.
It's just us, Nick. You can take credit for it.
You know, I think, like, Alejandro Jodorowsky once said that, someone stole one of his ideas from one of his comics or one of his movies, and he was like, ideas belong to the divinity. The god of cinema owns these. I am just a vessel through which they, transmit to humans. So I feel like it's that. You know what I mean? Like, the napkin, there needed to be a talking napkin murder mystery horror sci-fi rom-com movie, and so it just sort of found me and my close friends as a vessel.
I mean, I'd never seen a talking napkin in probably anything else. And now that is the bar from which now I will measure other talking napkin film.
Well, I was going to ask because you did the short a good while before you did the movie. Where did the idea for this entire movie come from?
God, I wish I had a better answer for this than this, but the truth is that we made that short for like a 48-hour film festival, mm-hmm. where you have a weekend to make a movie, and you like draw random stuff out of a hat the hat, unrelated hat to the hat in Hanky Panky. We drew like the prop was a napkin, and you had to have a main character who was an expert named Sam, and like everything kind of just like fell out of that. And we drew like the comedy genre. And so we were like, well, let's not just make the napkin a prop. Let's make the napkin the other main character, and we'll have the guy be an expert on napkins. And we just like combined stuff as close as we could. And we were like, well, okay, so now there's these two characters who are a napkin and a napkin expert, and let's go from there. And then it was much later when we were like, let's make a horror movie in a cabin. And I was like, well, what if we took the cute talking napkin movie, which was very innocent and not a horror movie, but made it that these two guys ended up in the situation where people are missed, like Agatha Christie style, being killed one after the next, and then the hijinks ensue.
The hat reveal got me, because like the whole time I'm like, everybody's like getting like sawed around the head, and I'm like, how? Like I'm in my head, I'm like, practicality. I'm like, what weapon is gonna do that? Like how are you? Doing this to people, and then like the hat done, and I'm like, ah, light bulbs.
It's the hat.
Well, because
we try to sort of like front load it with like as many random weapons or just sort of like splayed around this cabin as possible. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, one character's carrying a pickaxe. Let me see a shovel over here, and you know, you just have those things when you're in a cabin. So they were just, we didn't get those. Those were just there anyway.
I mean, if they don't have it, like, is it a cabin?
Right. Yeah, you need a shovel.
Got it.
Five.
Well, could you tell me a little bit about how the actors and actresses came to work on the project?
Yeah, we're all like a pre-existing group of friends.
Okay.
So this wasn't like a thing where we were like, open casting call, someone be in our crazy hat movie. This was like me and my friends were like, hey, let's make a movie. What do we have? We have a bunch of friends who are actors. We all grew up in L.A. And so we're all sort of around that. And we were like, well, we have access to a cabin and a camera and a talking hat puppet and a bunch of friends. So everything got built around that, right? Like, all of the actors got to also sort of help design the thing and build their characters.
So it's just an all around environment of friends. Like, hey, we're just going to set out, make this movie. And with working with your friends, the genesis of like great ideas and just the creative juices, I guess, just flows like a dam that's about to explode.
I mean, that's what we were going for. I hope so.
I mean, it was a very, I've seen, you know, a lot of stuff, but some stuff that was, we had interviewed people in the past and they're like, hey, check out our film. Hey, check this out. And there's a lot of great stuff that, you know, hasn't made it to, you know, big time theaters, or it's like a marvel to do. But this was one of the better ones I'd seen, where it's like the quality was really good. The idea was very funny. The execution was really, really well done. And everybody just looked like they were just having the time of their life being these characters.
Yeah. I mean, we mostly had a really good time. It can be stressful. We were all staying together. There was like 10 of us staying in this one tiny cabin making the movie. Mm-hmm. And like, so it got a little claustrophobic. And like, I think, you know, sometimes I think there was a little bit of hatred, but I think that really just like helps the sort of frenetic energy of the whole thing. We're all still friends. There's nobody. So I can say that. I can report that.
Well, I'm glad everybody's still friends. Is the napkin still? How's Woody?
You know what? I don't know where he is. I can't find him. He's easy to misplace because he's a napkin. I have Harry's right here. He's a little worse for wear these days. His peacock eyes have rotted away. But, you know, there's most of him is still here. He's falling apart.
Well, you know, the whole thing takes place in this cottage. It's, you know, in the middle. Well, cabin. Same thing, right? It's in the middle of like a snowstorm. What kind of challenges was it to try and film? Because well, there's a lot of outdoor scenes where you're, you know, traipsing through the snow. So
yeah, we were lucky to get like record levels of snow when we went up there to shoot. And thanks to the climate getting warmer, the last couple of winters up there have been very mild. But we shot this before that shift happened. And so it was freezing cold. That cabin is at about 8,000 feet of elevation. So it was like, we were truly battling the altitude and the elements. And man, there was one day where there was this like elaborate bit that I wanted to shoot in the snow, which eventually we cut out of the movie because it didn't work. But I spent a whole day shoveling like paths for the actors to walk. So that there was a sequence where they sort of like, it was very like Benny Hill, sort of like old school farce where the like actors would like walk, come out from one side of the frame and another one would come out here and then they disappear over here. And like the hat was flying around and we shot this whole thing and it was the most exhausting. Anyway, then I looked at it and I was like, this is so stupid. Like this is a movie that has a high tolerance for stupid things that can go into it. But like, there's a lot of things that were too stupid to put in the movie that we tried and that I was like, no, we can't, no matter how much.
Was there anything that you guys had cut from the film that you wish you kind of kept in looking back?
Oh my God. The first cut was 3 hours long and there was so much funny stuff in it. But I mean, yes, like there was whole storylines that we eventually had to lose because, you know, that's why we spent so long editing. It's because it was like, we didn't know totally what it was until, you know, deep into it. I was actually just listening to your guys' episode on like timeless movies. And it was kind of like Caddyshack where you guys were talking about how in Caddyshack they constantly rewriting and like trying to figure out the movie as you went. And like famously, I think the screenplay for Caddyshack was like 300 pages long. And then they let all of those actors just improv endlessly. Ours was only 110 or 111, but still it was like, it was too long. It was too long a script. We let actors do whatever they want and improv. And we had just a lot of funny stuff. I think the saddest thing that's on the cutting room floor is just there was so much of Diane, that's Ashley Holiday Tavares's character, traipsing on mushrooms around in the snow. I mean, we spent like a day just like with her pretending to be on shrooms. Maybe she was really, I don't think she was really on shrooms. Anyway, acting like she was having like a trip out in the snow and just, she was singing, making up little songs, and I think she opened up a snow cone shop to a bunch of forest creatures at one point. Like it was great, but like none of that is in the movie. It's like one shot, and there was at least a whole like afternoon of shooting, and I think she got hypothermia from it too, but she was fine.
Okay, I'm glad she's fine. Are you gonna do like like the Justice League has the Schneider cut? Are we gonna get the Roth cut?
I think that if we are so fortunate as to get a Blu-ray release, I have a lot of ideas for like special features for the like limited edition Blu-ray commentary and deleted scenes.
I feel like not enough people do enough with special features on a DVD release. The best one I'd ever seen is Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where it's like the Hard of Hearing is on the menu and it's just somebody shouting at you what each little thing says. And I was like, that was just genius. Whoever came up with that, like, that is comedy, sir.
I think you should do that. I wish. Well, so like,
do the Morse code version.
The movie's coming out, and they like were like, we're gonna make a DVD, and I was like, nobody, what? Okay, fine, you can make a DVD. Nobody's gonna buy it or sell it. I was like, do you guys want any special features for it? I'd be happy to collaborate. They were like, no, thank you. And I was like, when we come to the Blu-ray, I am going to insist that I want to put lots of special features on.
All kinds. So, I want like the Morse code edition, which is or just have it like Klingon, just some dude just start shouting at you in Klingon.
Well, everybody wants to see like.
I would love the funny to dub this film. Sorry, go ahead.
You should totally do a dub. Just do the drunk dub.
Yeah, we should. I think it would be very fun in French for no particular reason, and just have, I could get the whole cast back to do the whole movie in French. It would be, or Italian. It'd be very funny.
Just like trying to read like actual Italian and just messing it up completely, and just everybody just eventually devolving into beepity boppity.
We'll just put the captions file into Google Translate, pop it out, get them all to do it on their iPhones, put it together. I could do it in an afternoon.
Or have like celebrity voice actors do like Woody in the Hat. Like you just got Christopher Walken's all of a sudden, like the napkin.
Well, I had two questions.
Yeah. Okay.
I had two questions for you. One, where did the idea come from to make Woody his like a sexual fantasy thing for when he's cleaning up the messes.
Oh, let me clean that mess. Oh, yeah. That was.
So that's. Okay, so I'm primarily a writer. I think of myself as a screenwriter. I wrote on a TV show. I'm a writer first, and I'm all these other things I had to do to make this movie second. And like as a writer, one of the main exercises you do is you go, well, okay, if it's called if then, right? Like if this is true, then what else is true, right? And so like I think maybe the very first thing that comes out of like if this napkin is a conscious talking entity, then. Okay, I guess he gets off on cleaning up messes because he's a napkin. Like, I don't know. That just seems to fall out logically immediately. Mm-hmm. It's like the first thing that I think you know about this napkin is that, well,
he loves.
I guess he
a
wants
mess.
To be used to clean things up.
Oh well, and then the next question I had, I forget the character's name, but the lady has the two faces.
Yeah, yeah.
With the doll in the back of the head.
Yeah.
It's like she's two-faced, and he's like, you could have explained it a little better.
That was not my idea. Or it was, and then I later didn't want to do it. A lot of people love the face on the back of the head. When I got into the editing room with Lindsay, we looked at that, and I was like, we need to cut this out of the movie. This doesn't make any this is across that line of this is too stupid and crazy. Why is there a face on the back of her head? I know we did a lot of work to make that happen. You know, Toby actually got like a 3D model made of Azure. That's the actress who plays Lilith. It's her face like made into silicone and then shrunk and put on the back of her own head. Anyway, even at the end of the day, it just looks like a ridiculous little doll face. It turns out it's quite load bearing and we reference it far too much in the film and see it in too many scenes to cut it out. So stay it did. But then it became many people's favorite thing in the movie is just how I think that's maybe the most ridiculous thing in the whole film. It's a very ridiculous movie, but her having a face on the back of her own head, maybe as far as we go.
It was really funny. And then with the horror movie, I think it was Malignant that had come out kind of recently for the last couple of years after seeing that movie and then seeing this, it's a really funny, like transition.
So, of course, unbelievably, we actually made this before Malignant. Yeah. So
they're copying you.
Well, I think it's a case of independent invention where I guess it was just we all had to make faces on the back of people's heads.
It's just something you got to do. Sometimes you got to put a face on the back of the head. I mean,
yeah.
I wish I had
better answers for where this stuff came from. It's just out there, I think, floating in the ether.
What show? You saying you were a screenwriter for a show?
Oh, I was a staff writer on an ABC sitcom for many years called American Housewife, which was sort of an under-the-radar family sitcom on ABC that I'm sure they're all very happy to hear me talk about, like, napkins cleaning up messes and having orgasms.
And too. Getting off on it.
Yeah.
Hats killing people.
No, there were no jokes like that on that show.
So it was really, you know, constrictive environment. They didn't really let you run wild.
I kept pitching that the napkins in the house on American Housewife should be coming to life and getting off on cleaning up the house, but I was shot down by the showrunners at every turn.
I'll tell you what, showrunners, they just can't do nothing right these days.
Well,
no.
You also had a pretty big name on the movie with you, Seth Green. How did you come to get him on the project? Is he like a friend or just someone you've met before?
Did you kidnap
him?
Yeah,
he's a friend. Yeah, I forced him at gunpoint. I was like, I need you to just do your Skeletor voice for 45 minutes.
Just do it and we'll let your family go.
Seth is a friend. His wife is Claire, who plays Kelly in the movie. And we all became friends years ago. Lindsay, my wife, and his wife Claire, so Rebecca in the movie and Kelly in the movie, they took like an improv class together like 12 years ago or something and hit it off and became friends. And we met Ashley through them. And Christina, who plays Carla. And then we brought some of our friends from way back in the day, so Toby and Jacobs. We've kind of like mashed up a couple of friend groups and got this movie. And then somehow, I don't know where Anthony Rudowitz came from, who plays Cliff. He's just a genius who's a theater actor that we knew. And we were like, you gotta be in this movie too.
He just showed up. He just wandered in the set like, you know, like, hey!
he's so good. I feel like he's a real scene stealer in the movie and a lot of times. And just like, he's a really fun dude.
Those are the kind of dudes you always end up just kind of keeping the camera on. It's just like, come on, I know you're going to do something great and we're going to get it on camera, damn it.
Yeah, I wish we had had a crew so we could have shot with more than one camera at a time, because that makes improv a lot easier. It's very hard to edit together stuff you've shot with one camera when actors are making stuff up and the scene is changing. And we had intended to shoot with multiple cameras always, but we that means you need people to run multiple cameras, which we did not have. We didn't have a crew on this movie, really. So,
is there going to be, we
did what we did.
Is there going to be a sequel?
So I do. Yes. Yes. Listen, Mess you heard reloaded. It here first. It's coming. Hanky Panky 2, budget dependent on how well Hanky Panky 1 does. But even if it just bombs, I'm going to try to write Hanky Panky 2 before Hanky Panky 1, you know, really has been out a long time at least. So that just because it will be easier, I think, to write the sequel before if it bombs.
So, I mean, we already have the sentient napkin, the sentient hat. What are you thinking is going to become sentient? Is it going to be like a can of soda, a tablecloth, a chair?
A scarf.
A scarf?
I'm thinking, well, okay, yes. I'm thinking more hats and other articles of clothing. And that's it. Like, you got to draw the line somewhere, you know?
Sentient.
So yeah, Hanky Panky 2 is like a big alien invasion movie. It's more like if Hanky Panky 1 is like Clue on acid, Hanky Panky 2 I'm pitching as Independence Day on acid. The alien hats have come. They're going to try to take over the whole world, and the only thing that stands between humanity and its certain destruction is the Topanga Women's Ayahuasca Troop. That's it. I have an outline for the whole movie. I am going to write it.
I've been having to come up with an idea we joke around. It's like, oh, we should do like this. Like, we'll, you know, friends sitting around like, oh, hey, this would be a really funny idea. This would be a really funny show, or this would be a funny bit to film. And the one that I tell them all the time that I've always wanted to do since high school is a guy who like loses his big toe. He has the big toe, but he has like no other toes. And it's just like the trials and tribulations of like not being able to buy flip flops. He can't kick a soccer ball straight. It's just like that whole sphere of just nonsense.
Well, that's when you and Hayden
did he lose the toe?
It was bitten off by an alligator. And then we toy like, oh, like what's a funnier animal, like a platypus attack at a zoo?
Well, you and Hayden both came up with like the strange afflictions. A guy missing an ass cheek and stuff like that.
The guy with one butt cheek, and he has like the implant, and then like something pops, and he's just slowly doing this in an interview. horrible ideas.
Sorry, this is important to me. That one ass cheek, is it just that he's missing the other one, or is it one big one?
No, he's missing the other one. Two? It is just one.
And so what's there? Just like it's just bone, like skin nothing. On
it's
bone?
Just flat.
Right.
Like if you're looking at it topographically, it's like flat and then the butt.
I mean, it could be a very beautiful rom-com where these two people meet each other with
the
person and the buttless person. Could be.
Mitch, write that down.
They meet each other. Immediately they don't get, you know what I mean? They hate each other.
But they're just passionately in love at the end.
By the end of the movie, they've discovered that they're soulmates.
They go to the same like prosthetic designer.
Well, before we move too far off of the Hanky Panky movie, what was your favorite part shooting in the movie?
Sorry. Okay, I will answer that, but I just want to go back to the butt and toe movie for a second. I feel like you got to call it. You got to have kick ass in the title, because like it's got to be like one of them goes to kick the other one and like misses. Misses, and it's like, why'd you miss? And it's like, I have no toes, and the other one's like, I don't have a butt cheek, and that's a very good way to meet you.
Damn,
it's a rom-com.
We didn't think of any of that. We just thought it was hilarious trying to watch somebody with one big toe and no other toes like try to walk in flip-flops.
Yeah, although you probably will earn the wrath of the amputee community.
He made up some like organization that was like people who only had just a big toe, no other toes. And it was like this like elitist thing where people who had all 10 digits.
I don't want that idea came to you. I'm just here to take some of your various good ideas and puzzle piece them together. You got to put the butt thing with the toe thing.
All right, add the butt with the toe, and don't take that out of context.
You're editing this, so God knows what you could make me sound like at this point by taking me talking about butts and toes this much and putting it all together.
Don't worry, we'll be good to everybody.
We're always good to our people.
It's fine. It would be very funny if you turned this into like some gotcha journalism. Filmmaker Nick Ross talks about towing butts all the time. Obsessed with toes and butts.
He's a maniac. Cancel.
It's on TMZ.
TMZ has the scoop. You had a question, Mitch?
The question was, what was my favorite part of making Hanky Panky?
Yes.
Right? You mean besides finishing it? I spent a really long time in the like final stages of getting the movie done. It really did. Getting a feature film over the finish line is really hard. And so the moment that it was like, I was like, this movie is done, was a very moving one. I mean, it would definitely be during the production, right? Like the best parts were, you know, being in that cabin with a bunch of my favorite people and like getting to make a movie like that. There was some really, really fun stuff that we got to do. Definitely not when I was acting in it. So let's see, that narrows it down. I mean, a lot of the running around in the snow, honestly, just like, like the day that it was like a full blizzard, and it's just, there's a sequence where Sam is being chased mm-hmm. by Harry. And it was just like, you know, me and Toby are playing Frisbee with the hat back and forth as he's like ducking it and making snowballs and throwing them at them. Like, that was really fun. I mean, I grew up in LA. It's like, snow was a real marvel to me as well. So like, I think probably just like the general, like getting to be outside filming in the snow was probably my favorite part.
Okay.
Being from the north and playing in the snow, like it is fun for the first hour until like your feet start to get sweaty, and then like they used to get cold because it's wet. Like the snow gets through your gloves and your hands get wet, and you can't feel your fingers. And you're just like, I want to go inside and drink some Campbell's soup.
Yeah, we were drinking. Here's the best part of making Hanky Panky was coming in from the snow into the cabin and then making like hot Ovaltine spiked with all kinds of like whatever booze we had. That was great.
Let me get my chocolate milk and Jack Daniels.
Yeah. That was probably actually one of the drinks we were drinking.
I wonder how chocolate milk and Jack Daniels would taste.
Good.
Good. Hey, I'm going to jot that down. Nick recommended.
So our actual official drink of the film that we were drinking up there, we called it the Heber Creeper. We shot this in Heber, Utah. And the Heber Valley Railroad has this slow, scenic mm-hmm. tourist railroad, mm-hmm. which we call the Heber Creeper. And so the Heber Creeper, we took that name for the drink, is a whole milk Ovaltine with Kahlua and peppermint schnapps. So it is very Christmassy and it's very warming and also sneaks up on you and and just makes you feel real good if you've been out in the snow for in a blizzard all day.
That is a great combo.
So you recommend that while people are watching the movie?
Yes.
Yeah, much more than mm-hmm. the other, you know, the other, like, my character, Dr. Crane, in the film is always seen drinking we never make much of it. It's a martini, but you see there's marshmallows in it. It's called a marsh-tini, and I do not recommend that drink. It is disgusting, and no one should have that.
I'm happy to know that, like, during the movie, like, people who are drinking, like, on set, like you or whatever, like, in a shot, like, it's real. That's real drinking. That's real alcohol. That's not just water in a martini glass. And it's like, ooh, this martini or iced tea pretending to be whiskey. Nope, real booze.
We'll be right back.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At the Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that owl has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out the Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
We did a combo because there's quite a bit of drinking actually in this film. Most of those cans of Busch beer that Cliff drinks, I'm pretty sure that was always beer. Carla is always drinking wine. Sometimes it's wine, sometimes it's not wine. The mushrooms that are consumed are mostly not psilocybin mushrooms, but I can't say that with 100% certainty. And The martinis were sometimes a martini and sometimes just water with marshmallow in it after a certain amount of hours.
Well, while you had this movie in the festivals and stuff, what was the kind of reception and stuff you got from the movie?
Just exceptionally positive. actually, no, for real, like, surprisingly delightful. I teach at Cal State Northridge, and the first audiences to see the movie were my students.
Okay.
In like film 101 and in American film history, which are the classes that I teach, which is kind of terrifying because, you know, I'm the professor, so they assume that I must know what I'm talking about. And then I show them Hanky Panky and I'm like, we're going to do Citizen Kane next. I hope I still have credibility or whatever. the movie gets laughs in all of its screenings. It's gotten laughs sort of start to finish. And we've been in a couple small festivals and that's true. And, it's hard to say how well it's going to play, you know, for people who are watching it streaming and watching it by themselves. I think it probably is a bit of a different film, but like watching it with an audience is very gratifying because, you know, when you watch it with an audience, you're just sitting there going, please let people laugh, please let people laugh, because they have to start laughing early and then laugh the whole way. You know, no one starts laughing halfway through a movie. If you haven't laughed in the beginning of this movie, you're out, you're walking out. Right. So, mostly the reception has been pretty positive. You know what? I will say this, that with the couple of mixed reviews, we've gotten mostly pretty good reviews. Because who's going to review Hanky Panky and trash it? Like, these guys with no money went out there and tried to make a movie, idiots.
Siskel and Ebert, two thumbs down.
Yeah. A couple people have been like, this movie was not for me, right? Mm-hmm. And some people have been like, I don't know, this movie's kind of stupid, but also I laughed so hard I almost peed myself a couple times. And it's like, then you loved it. What are you talking about? What do you mean a mixed review? If we made you like, what movies are out there making you pee yourself with laughter? Thank you. This is a great review. It'll be like, I don't know, B-, 7 out of 10, but I did piss myself laughing. Like,
I laughed so hard I urinated. Two thumbs down. It's like, what? Like, what was your benchmark?
What do you want out of looking at movies in general if they can make you piss yourself and you don't, and that's not an A+?
Outrageous.
Well,
that's what I think. So,
well, moving on just a little bit, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into filmmaking and what made you decide to pursue directing and writing as opposed to just acting.
Well, what made me pursue directing? I'll say this, like, but that was just the necessity of like, Lindsay wasn't going to direct, didn't want to direct this by herself. I think she was, Lindsay had directed a number of shorts, music videos and stuff. And she was like, I don't really know if Hanky Panky should be like my debut feature or whatever. And I was like, well, we'll direct it together. And so it can be our debut feature, but you can still like make a more serious movie at some point. She was like, that sounds like a great plan. I don't know. I grew up, my parents are both in the industry. My dad is a director. And so like, I never wanted to immediately follow in his footsteps. Mm-hmm. And so for a really long time, I went to grad school and I did all these other things. And then I was like, I really want to like write movies. And I moved back to LA in like 2013 to like try to do that. So I guess it's been a little over 10 years now. I don't know. I like really like making stuff up. Like, that's really fun. Like, and that's all I would really like to do. Like, in a perfect world, I would just get to write all these movies all the time, and I'll write the Toe Butt movie and write Hanky Panky 2 and then have someone pay me a ton of money and go make it. The reality is, I think like if you write something like Hanky Panky or if this is your style, like you kind of have to prove that it might work and be fun and be funny and have to make it yourself. So, I will continue to do that until such a time as, you know, the briefcases of money come arriving to, you know, make these movies on a larger scale.
When Warner Bros. Is like, here's a duffel bag of money. Go do this.
They got those duffel bags of money over there. Jeez. David Zaslav, where you at? where's my briefcase full of free cash flow?
Honestly,
I was also going to ask you, looking through your IMDb, you've done a lot of acting and you've had other writing experiences on a lot of big shows as well. What kind of experiences do you have from those?
Oh, those were all very, like, I could have a reel of like, I actually started making a reel once of all my TV acting credits because they're all like one line. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's not a funny enough bit. But like the reel would be like, it's like a 2 minute scene. And then it cuts over to like some mechanic in the corner being like, hey, and that's me. And then it goes to the next scene. And, you have to sit through 45 minutes of that or whatever to get like the four lines I've ever had. You know, like me as Hydra agent number two on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. freeze. And that's all I say. Like,
but you said it really well. There was a lot of conviction.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think so. I played a Kazakhstani fireman in an episode of Scorpion where they let me write. They were like, it's just like was written like, follow me in Russian or whatever. And then I got there and they were like, you speak Russian, right? I was like, yeah, of course. That's how I got this role. And so I had to like call a Russian. Like, so I don't even remember what the line was like, but it's me saying, follow me in however you say that in Russian. Like, it's not an illustrious career as an actor. Dr. Crane is the performance I guess I'm most proud of, which feels crazy, but I think it holds up. It's funny.
I thought
that character is more realistic than, I mean, I went to grad school and was like, I have a PhD in English, and like I knew a lot of those. I knew Dr. Crane, and so it's kind of like a bit of an expanded, more ridiculous version of myself, but also I've met some professors who are that guy.
There's some weird professors running around out there.
Yeah.
Well, can you tell us, I mean, you've worked on a lot of bigger projects. Are there any like starstruck moments that you had meeting anybody else in the film industry?
We'll be right back.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. Look, we all artists, man. You feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now. I gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
I did like meet Kristen Wiig at a party once and was very starstruck. I thought that was like, oh my god. God, I should have a better answer. I'm not easily starstruck because when you grow up in LA and you grow up like around it, like you meet famous people, mm-hmm. and like, I don't know, like the other day I was at a cafe and with my 3-year-old who really loves cars, and Jeremy Piven was at the next table. And I was like, that's the voice of Lightning McQueen's agent Harv. And she was like, what are you talking about? I don't know what a voice actor is. I don't remember that character from the franchise, but,
not Lightning McQueen.
Yeah, my son, he's 2. He just sees him on TV and he goes, Go-Go's. I want to watch Go-Go's.
Yeah.
Or my nieces. It's just like, Bluey. Oh, all it is, Bluey. Bluey. I don't know what Bluey is.
I would be starstruck if I met the voice cast of Bluey. I don't know who they are, what they look like, but then I'd be like, oh my God, it's Bandit.
Yeah, me and my daughter watch it all the time.
Yeah.
I did see one of your shorts, you know, that had popped up in your IMDb, Our Your Cranian Sky, where you were a writer. I'm guessing
this is a new one. Festival circuit right now, actually. Our Ukrainian Sky is sort of, I just actually went to Palm Springs. I was at Amdocs for a screening of it, which is a really great film festival. That is the thing I worked on with my dad. I've worked a lot with my dad, which is a crazy story that it was just like, he was like, hey, this was a few years ago. He was like, hey, I'm doing this crazy thing. I'm going to Ukraine. And I was like, what? Okay, cool. And he was like, yeah, there's this group of lawyers in England who are like driving used pickup trucks over the border and into Ukraine to donate them to the war effort there. Mm-hmm. And I volunteered. I signed up to drive a truck. And I was like, great. I think that's fantastic. Anyway, so then like once he was like going, they found out he was a filmmaker and they were like, do you want to film this? And we'll use it. And like, it would be cool. So he put together like a skeleton crew and like, you know, drove, they filmed their experience picking up a truck in London and driving it, you know, into a war zone basically. And then interviewed whoever he could in Kyiv, and then came back and was like, is this a documentary? I don't know. Would you like to help? And I was like, yes, I would like to help. So, like the job of a writer on a documentary is obviously quite different than it is like on a narrative mm-hmm. feature, and it can mean a lot of different things. And in this case, it was a lot about sort of like looking at, I think there was about 16 hours of footage that they shot, and mm-hmm. just being like, how do we shape this into a 12-minute short story that has a beginning and a middle and an end? Mm-hmm. Which is, so I was doing that while I was editing Hanky Panky, and it's a really fun challenge. Like, I like documentary work like that, and it's really cool, and this was a good cause, so I was like, I was very happy to help in any way I could. But it's really, it's not like my doc. I was just like trying to help, be like, I think this is how we should set it up, and maybe we could use this interview and cut to this and this.
That's a hell of a premise where it's like, hey, like your dad's just like, hey, I'm going to Ukraine. You're like, okay. He's like, yeah, there's British lawyers who are taking used cars to Ukraine. And it's like, British, like what? Like,
yeah. No, but it was crazy. I think that's like, I think it's a good documentary short for that reason, that it's like, there are really people who are out there doing kind of interesting things that you mm-hmm. would never think about. And it was just like, why is this group of people, they're not just donating money. They're not just doing whatever. They're, you know, they've, this group of people has like altered their lives. And because like, what they discovered is that like most of the drivers who would go to Ukraine, like had like a life changing experience doing mm-hmm. this. And so have done it over and over again. And so now they've donated, the last time I talked to them, like 300 or 400 trucks. So it's become this whole thing where they are taking these used pickups and getting them over there and, you know, handing them off directly to the military. I don't know. I think it's just pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And he said it's already in the festival circuit.
Yeah. So like, you know, it was sort of the group that was doing this mm-hmm. financed it. So it's their project and they have it, and they sort of have been, I think they're also using it for fundraising. Mm-hmm. And we just were sort of like, my interest was like, look, I'm happy to help this group doing whatever they're doing. But I was like, mm-hmm. I think it's also important just as a talking piece to keep Ukraine in the, you know, international conflict conversation. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we've been trying to just sort of like get it in front of audiences wherever possible.
Like, hey, this is still happening.
Yeah. This is, they're still bringing the trucks over there, you know? So, you know, it's, I think, you know, there's a world where like, if our team was really committed, mm-hmm. we'd like go at like, I'm not going to do this. Like, I have young kids and my dad is like not going to do this, but like somebody should like embed with the troops and do a full feature length documentary on these trucks, because I think it's interesting. But you know, in our sort of modest way, we were like, okay, we can make this little human interest mm-hmm. piece about like why this group of people wanted to do this crazy thing. And they continue to. Mm-hmm.
That's the crazy part about like now. Cause like you can pretty much YouTube like Ukraine, Russia war, and you can get footage like hours of soldiers who have GoPros strapped to their vests or strapped to their helmets, and you could just watch the war.
Yeah, I mean, it could be live or it could be like, you know, a couple hours old. Or yeah, something, you know?
I mean, that really sort of became a thing with like Iraq towards the later stages, mm-hmm. where dudes had GoPros and it's just some dude at a fob, him and his boys hanging out smoking Marlboros, and then it's like, oh, that's One Shot Charlie. He shoots at our base every hour, one time, just to make us mad. And then they just make like a whole video bit about it. And it's like, I'm really surprised like that filmmaking like that hasn't really become like a thing, like just from soldiers themselves. Like they just don't have like their own YouTube channel. It's like the Ukrainologues where it's like episode 3, like, you know, SHIT got real, or it's like episode 4. It's like chow time. And it's just like their mundane lives a little bit mixed in with, you know, combat. I'd watch that show. You should write that, Nick.
No, you gotta write. You keep coming up with these ideas. You gotta write them.
I'm just an idea guy. I can't write to save my life, and my handwriting is horrible. I could write a great idea, and then I won't be able to read it later.
You could get a typewriter, I guess.
He comes up with ideas, and he's like, "Hey, can y'all do that?" He wanted us to do kind of like the chicken. Was it Robot Chicken with like the action figures? So I made like three or four episodes where we have our own figures talking to whoever our guest is. But it took way too much time for me compared to what I have to actually edit.
Oh yeah. Stop motion is one of the like most labor intensive processes to make anything.
We weren't even trying to
much
stop
easier
motion.
To just act in it to do live action.
We weren't even trying to do like stop motion. I was like, is there a way like you could have like we had like a little set and it had a couch and little microphones and a Rodecaster and like little headsets
like holding the
and it's just like little yeah. action figures sitting on like breakable wrestling furniture. And just like, you know, like it cuts to like one of us is talking and it's just like, it's just a still shot of that person just standing like this. And it maybe it might move to that. And that was it. There is no other movement.
I mean, you know, I'm on board. Like this is the villain of my movie. And it's just like, you just, you know, if you put him like down somewhere, you can't see the hand. It's just like, now he's talking to you. All of a sudden. Like, that's it. I'm not the puppeteer. I don't want to do Toby's job for him. There's still gaffer's tape in this to where all the blood bags were.
Well, it's already been 45. I don't want to keep you any longer. I know you took enough time.
I have a class to teach at some point.
Well, before you go, I did want to ask, you told us that you're going to try and still work on Hanky Panky 2. Is there any other projects that you're working on or that you kind of want to promote with friends or anything like that?
Yeah, stay tuned for my big Jewish Hanukkah horror movie, which is called Dreddel, that I
have Jewish Hanukkah horror.
Yeah, there's not enough Jewish horror, and I have several pitches. I really want to do a Golem movie too, but I think Dreddel. Once I came up with that name, I was like, I got to write it now, and so I still haven't quite cracked it. I'm working on it, but that's going to be the next fun spec. I think will be. You spin the right now. I'm like, maybe it's you spin the dreidel and that like you get one of the 10 plagues of Egypt if you lose. Like, I'm not really sure. I know that's
kind of like a Jumanji.
Yeah, whatever it lands on, exactly. It has some kind of negative connotation to whatever it lands on. It does something to you.
Or it like spins like bad things are going to happen. Like the little like the symbols on the side like turn like glowing red and it spins faster and faster and faster.
Yeah, working title is just Jumanji.
And we're banned in Israel.
I mean, our listeners, if they can't tell that I'm Jewish from being an LA screenwriter who's talking about all this stuff, I am Jewish.
He has the pass. He's allowed to do it.
Yeah, he's allowed to.
I'm allowed to. That's all I'm allowed to do is Hanukkah horror movies, I think. So I'm going to go for it.
I look forward to seeing Dreddel and Hanky Panky too.
Yeah, one day.
Napkins Reloaded or... whatever the sequel.
A lot of big announcements heard first on this podcast.
we're normally late to the party, but it's nice to be first for once.
You're way ahead of the game here on a movie that I just have the idea for and haven't even written yet.
Is there anything else you wanted to plug while we got you?
God, that I probably should be. No, that's it. Just Hanky Panky, April 19th on Amazon, Google, Apple, all the really funny named ones. There's something called Hoopla out there.
Hoopla.
They're like voodoo Hoopla, and yeah, there's all kinds of great, but it'll be everywhere.
Okay.
And that's it.
All right.
Well, thank you everybody who joined us for this interview with writer director Nick Roth did Hanky Panky, a Ukrainian Sky, or Our Ukrainian Sky, which is in the festival circuit. He's a teacher. He's a professor. He's got a lot going on, and I hope you enjoyed our interview, and we'll catch you next time.